Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 421 for September 16th, 2013. Today's big topic is knowing what to do and not doing it. And this topic was inspired by an email sent to Stutter Talk by our first guest, Jeff Olson. Welcome back to Stutter Talk, Jeff.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on air. You were recently featured on Stutter Talk episode 397 with Brittany Bicknaver, and I've wanted to get you on the podcast for years, and Brittany beat me to it. today's episode is going to be in two parts. So during the first half, I'm going to speak with Jeff, and then during the second half of today's show, the Stutter Talk B team is going to tackle the same topic, knowing what to do and not doing it. Jeff Olson is a person who stutters and works as a design engineer in Portland, Oregon. Jeff attended his first National Stuttering Association conference in 2009, where we shared a beer. Well, we each had our own, and has attended several annual conferences since then. Jeff, I remember meeting you, and you were talking about your children, and in that time and in space, I had no thoughts in my mind about having children, and now I'm calling you with two children downstairs. So I think we're in very similar ballparks.
Yes, we are.
Jeff is a member of the National Stuttering Association chapter in Portland, Oregon. So, Jeff, you sent Stutter Talk an email recently that I think is such a great topic for us, for the stuttering community. And it came at the right time because recently I was thinking about a few people I know in the stuttering world who have been posting the same questions and concerns basically year after year for 10 years or more online. And I think to myself, they seem to know what to do. And then their question ends with, but I'm not doing it. How can I do it? So we're going to get into that topic. Could you read to us that paragraph from your email, please?
Sure. So I wrote, I had a great time going to the National Stuttering Association conference in Scottsdale, the location of my first conference 4 years ago. I attended Michael Boyle's session on mindfulness and had a good talk with him afterwards. Nita and Lee Reeves also had a great session on acceptance. I could listen to them talk all day. I tend to go into these sessions and the conference in general looking for answers, the one answer that will help me. I come away realizing that I have the answer. I know what to do, but I just don't want to do it. Fundamentally, I just don't like to stutter. The physical struggle that entails, along with the mental juggling that tries to deal with that struggle, has always been very frustrating for me. Change is happening, but slowly.
Thank you for reading that, and it gives us so much to talk about. And I just have to ask you off the top here, because I just noticed it. You wrote, you're looking for the one answer that will help me, and you capitalize the O in one, like some people would with God, where you would capitalize the G. Did you do that on purpose?
I did.
Yeah, can you just spend a second on that and tell us what you were thinking?
Well, it just seems like I've always been looking for that one thing that will help me deal with stuttering, and you hear about all these different intensive programs you could do or other different programs that you can do, and you just kind of wonder, is there one program out there that's going to help me? And if I just do that program, then this stuttering will go away. And so I just kind of always thought about that going through my mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back in my own stuttering journey if I was ever looking for that one thing. And I guess it was always just it would go away. I would stop stuttering. But once I accepted that it wasn't just going to go away, I don't recall still looking for that one thing. I mean, are you still actively looking for one program or one thing or one focus or one way to face stuttering?
Yeah, I think that I still do, although, you know, I do think that it's going to be a combination of things that'll eventually help me, but I guess I still have that, you know, that hope that if I just find that, you know, that next thing that'll help me, that it'll kind of get me over the hump and big change will happen.
Hmm. Yeah. When I attended as a clinician and as a stutterer, the Successful Stuttering Management Program, when they had one in Utah, a part of me thought this could really be that one thing for so many stutterers. But of course, it's never that simple, because that one thing is then years and years of follow-up and working with stutterers. And there's so many things included in that one thing. But I digress. So talk to us a little bit about this idea that you know what to do and you're not doing it. I mean, first of all, is that a good way to say it, where you pretty much know what you should be doing to face your stuttering, and that the challenge is actually doing it?
I think that I, you know, I just don't like to stutter, and I often try and, you know, prevent that from happening, just the kind of natural instinct of, you know, keeping, avoiding painful situations, you know, situations that happened in the past, and, you know, words that come up that I know I'm going to stutter on, and I just, you know, avoid them with the understanding that if I, you know, try and say them, that it's, I'm going to block, and it's going to be seconds or 10 seconds, just a long time, and you never know if you're going to get through it. And I think, you know, one of the things I really need to work on is just kind of letting stuttering happen. And it sounds simple, but for me it's just been very, very challenging, and I think I've always trying to prevent that pain from happening.
So it sounds like your concern is about the possibility of stuttering, like what would happen if you did stutter. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I still struggle with that. I know it's okay to stutter, but when you're in that moment and you're trying to, you know, you're worrying about how am I going to get through this, and will I get this word out? It's just, I think I see the mountain, and I think that I have to, you know, take one big leap over the mountain instead of, you know, lots of little steps over that mountain.
I don't want to overgeneralize your experience here, but I've worked with some clients, some adults who stutter, who seem to take a very intellectualized approach to stuttering treatment. And I think in some ways it's very similar to your approach, where they know what they, you know, quote, should be doing. Like they say, I know I should be talking about stuttering. I know I should be allowing myself to stutter. I know I should be using fake stuttering at work. And they have a real hard time doing it, and they compensate, or maybe even overcompensate, by reading about stuttering and researching about stuttering and listening to Stutter Talk and reading books and talking to specialists. And then they come back and they still haven't sort of dug in and done that work. Do you feel that there's a part of you that's compensating in other ways?
Yeah, that could be true. I do try and use voluntary stuttering, and I have tried to put myself out there more, and you know, attend all the chapter meetings that we have here. But it's still a struggle to do that. And I just think, you know, of years of covert stuttering, that it's so ingrained in me, you know, not to stutter and avoid that situation and avoid certain words, that it's going to take a while to change that behavior.
And we're going to get back to the covert stuttering stuff in a minute, because that's my bread and butter, man. I love talking about passing as fluent and covert stuttering.
Thank you.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter Reitz is here with Jeff Olson, a person who stutters in Portland, Oregon. So Jeff, you wrote that I have the answer. I know what I have to do, but I just don't want to do it. What's one of the answers that you're not quite yet doing?
I think just letting myself stutter. I think that I still avoid a lot of those situations, and there's some words that I have that are just that I know I stuttered on, and they're just words that scare me, kind of like horror movies scare me. That I just for years I didn't say them. I just took them out of my vocabulary, and just trying to allow myself to say those words and say anything else that I might want to say. Just trying to avoid that avoidance behavior.
I've heard many stutterers say things like they know what they have to do to be fluent. And they're basically saying, I'm not using my speech tools. But I think what you're saying is perhaps very different from that. I'm not even sure that they're closely related, because I think what you're saying is to really change your whole approach to communication, right?
Yes. Yes.
So letting yourself stutter is a big, big answer for you. Is there something else that you have the answer that you think you should be doing, but you're just not doing it?
I think also, when I stutter, not just kind of moving forward and trying to forget about that episode and not, I'm an engineer and I tend to analyze a lot of things and trying to figure out, what happened in that particular case. I think if I could somehow remove that part of it, I could move forward easier and not, not worry about it so much.
To oversimplify the stuttering world quite a bit. So we're both coming from very covert stuttering, passing as fluent backgrounds. I'm wondering what the very overt stutterers take on this conversation is. Like, what are the things that some of the very, very overt stutterers know that they should be doing, but they're not doing? I'm curious about that. I'm wondering if it would also be letting myself stutter, or if it would be more making myself use some type of physical speaking strategy or making myself talk about stuttering with my family and friends. So for those of you who don't so much associate with the covert side of things, or maybe you do, but for those of you who are very overt in your stuttering, why don't you share your comments with Stutter Talk? Send an email to stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com. You've been active, Jeff, in the stuttering self-help world for some years now. Do you find that you're starting to chip away at these covert actions or inactions?
Yeah, I do. I think that I don't try and hide the fact that I stutter, just kind of taking a book about stuttering out into the public, and holding it around was something, 5 years ago I wouldn't consider doing. But now I can do it. I still think about it and think, what other people are going to think if they see me holding a book on stuttering. But it doesn't worry me as much as it used to. And also attending the chapter meetings, I still have a hard time sometimes getting to them, kind of I have to pull myself to them but I'm always glad that I've gone to the meetings, and they always give me a much better perspective on stuttering, and I think just attending those meetings have just, changed the way I think about stuttering a little bit over time.
In my own stuttering path, in my own journey, I really think that I hit a rock bottom point where things were getting progressively worse for a few years. And by the time I was graduating from college, I had reached this point where I had these incredible stomach ulcers and pains. And there were times where I was up for two or three consecutive days, and headaches, and just avoiding, avoiding, avoiding. And I was starting to look for jobs in the New York Times, because that's how you looked for jobs in those days, for jobs that didn't require talking. So I really think I sort of hit a classically rock bottom moment where I was going to doctors, but I wouldn't talk about stuttering. They didn't see me as a stutterer, but I was having physical pain because I'm convinced because of how covert I was and because how much I wasn't talking about stuttering. Have you had, do you think, rock bottom moments? I ask you that because I'm wondering if you've hit rock bottom, because we always talk about in the stuttering world, do people need to hit rock bottom? And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think I hit rock bottom. I think, you know, a couple of years ago when I decided to do something about my stuttering, I realized that after 20 years of being covert and waiting for the stuttering to go away, it just wasn't going to go away. And that, if there was really ever a time in my life when I would make some kind of change, that was kind of the time for it to happen. Otherwise, I think I probably would have been covert for the rest of my life. I think I just kind of reached that point where, you know, I wondered what it'd be like to not worry about stuttering. And that kind of thought drove me to do something about it. But I don't think I hit rock bottom at that, you know, point in my life. I think I'm actually going to probably stutter more before I stutter less.
Now, you say that future tense. So in your mind, you haven't gotten there yet, but at some point you're expecting that you're going to allow yourself to stutter more, which would then be something that helps you. So you're looking forward to that?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I think that'll happen. I think, you know, I stutter more now than I did 2 years ago, but I don't think it's, you know, kind of my natural stuttering amount, I guess you could say.
Sure. So I'm hearing you right. You're going in the right direction, but perhaps you're not going as fast as you would like to go. Is that a appropriate or fair way to say it?
Yeah, that's a fair way of saying it.
So not only am I a stutterer, but I'm a speech language pathologist. So I'm curious if you've considered, so you go to self-help to help yourself deal with this. Have you in recent years considered working with some type of a therapist to help you make these adjustments?
I did. I worked for a therapist for almost 2 years, back around the first time, when I met you four years ago. And at the time, I think, you know, I didn't stutter much at all in the therapy session. It was just not the environment that I would have a lot of trouble in. And I think I was also, you know, just avoiding whatever words that I knew I'd have trouble on. So I did have some therapy a couple of years ago.
So it sounds like it might have helped you, but not as much as you may have wanted. Is that right, or would you put it a different way?
I think it helped me, and it helped me get in the right direction. And I've kind of, you know, tried to take the reins myself and figure out what I need to do next. And I think just not having the stuttering out there and where you can see it and try and figure out what things you can do to help it, until I get to that point, I'm just going to kind of deal with it myself and try and figure things out.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes this here with Jeff Olson. Just one or two more questions Jeff. I know you've been listening to Stutter Talk for at least four or five years. I know that you're fairly active in the stuttering self-help world with the National Stuttering Association. Do you hear people on Stutter Talk? Do you hear people at your local meetings that help you deal with this in some way, that inspire you or help you think about these issues?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone that I hear on your podcast helps me, and just listening to people stutter has been very helpful. Just trying to put it into that mind that it's okay, and that you know, people move on with their lives and still stutter. And hearing people in the support group meetings say the same things and just stutter and move on with life has helped me a lot.
Now, I should have been paying more attention to this, because I'm really paying attention to the content of what you're saying. So I really can't recall how much stuttering you've had, but just in the last few minutes, you certainly haven't had a lot of noticeable stuttering. Are you just not stuttering right now, or are you changing words? Are you using avoidance strategies, or what's going on?
I don't think I'm changing words. I think maybe this environment is not doesn't cause me to stutter a whole lot. You know, talking on the phone for the most part has not been too bad for me over the years, although there are all times where I, you know, we wanted to order pepperoni pizza and I have always had a hard time with my peas, so I wouldn't order a pepperoni pizza. But yeah, I don't know if I'm, you know, subconsciously changing words. I don't think that I am right now, but I think it's just not a situation that would cause me a lot of trouble.
So, Jeff, you've said a few times during our conversation that you need to let your stuttering happen. You also mentioned using some voluntary stuttering. Let me put a twist on that. So instead of letting your stuttering happen, another way to look at it, and I'm going to ask you, not tell you, is what about making your stuttering happen? Are they similar things, or what's your take on it all?
Is that making it as far as the same thing as being voluntary stuttering, or?
Yeah, I'm not trying to be cryptic, but so there's voluntary stuttering, but there's also putting yourself or myself in situations in which I speak in stressful moments where I will stutter, or I leave myself open to the real possibility of stuttering, or I hold myself to a no avoidance strategy moment where I'm going to have a conversation with someone and stick to my guns and not change words. And if that means stuttering, then I guess I made it happen. So just putting yourself in situations where you're not only letting overt stuttering occur, but you're really in some way making it occur, because after all, we are stutterers.
Right. Yeah, actually, I have tried to push myself to go into to bookstores and ask for a book on stuttering. I did that a couple weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, where I knew I was going to ask for a book on stuttering, and stuttering, that word has always usually caused me trouble. And it took me several times before I got the nerve, you know, to actually go into the store and ask for someone to book on stuttering. And I finally did it, and it was, I blocked for, it seemed like minutes, but it was probably several seconds. I asked for a book on stuttering, and I blocked on stuttering, and I opened my mouth and nothing came out. And the person, the customer service, was there, and he just kind of stared at me, and he didn't say anything, and I stared back at him, and I tried, you know, not to lose eye contact, and he was patient, and I was patient. I was trying to figure out how I'm going to get this, you know, my mind is racing, and trying to figure out how I'm going to get this word out, and I finally came out, and he just moved on with the conversation, and I tried not to, you know, freak out about it, so that was a good positive experience with it.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Just recently, I got in contact with an old stuttering friend. That person's not old. I've just known them for a while. And I was really struck by how far the person had come with his stuttering. So when he can have the time to schedule it, he's going to come on air and really talk about how, after so many years of dealing with stuttering, he got to the place he is, where he went from not speaking publicly to being pretty comfortable with it. And that's always something that's really fascinated me, when you see somebody 10 years later and they're in a much better place. Well, how did you get here? You know, can try to put it into words, you know, what you did. There's certainly not a recipe, but there's some probably big moments that I think the person could share. So I'm looking forward to that. So Jeff, do you have any last thoughts on this topic of knowing what to do and not doing it?
I just think that I know that I need to stutter more, and it's just such a thing that has been very hard for me to do. And it sounds easy, but I've always just tried to keep the painful moment away from me. And I'm just going to try and keep moving forward.
I'm going to do a terrible thing here, but I actually have a last thought. So maybe I could give my last thought and you could comment on it. And that could be a way to end out. I'm in some ways, I mean, I had a really, really hard couple of years where I mentioned where I hit rock bottom. And in some ways I'm pretty thankful for it. As things are getting worse and worse, I reached a point where for the first time in years, my stuttering was coming out into the open, where I just couldn't hide them all anymore. So I would be in a college class and all of a sudden this hard stutter would come out, where nobody saw me as a stutterer. They might have saw me as socially awkward or perhaps a little weird for all my avoidance strategies, but they never heard me stutter. And hitting that rock bottom and having all those headaches and sleepless nights and stomach pains and then all that overt stuttering all of a sudden, I really reached a point where I had to face my stuttering. And I think I was treading water for a long time up into that point. By treading water, I mean that my avoidance strategies were working for a long time, and then they just weren't working anymore, and I was physically and mentally miserable. So in some ways, I'm really glad that I couldn't tread water anymore. Do you have any thoughts on those comments?
I think that's amazing that you're able to move forward through that. I've just always, that stuttering moment has always just been so hard for me to deal with. And I've never quite figured out, or I haven't yet figured out how to move past that. You know, how to keep myself from falling down those stairs and getting up and keep walking. So I'm always wondering and curious about what other people have done so that I can try it myself, and maybe, you know, that'll be the one thing that helps me.
Well, Jeff, I liked you the moment I met you. You have a real good soul, and you always send Stutter Talk the most thoughtful and kind and interesting emails. You update us a few times a year, and I love getting them. I love hearing from you, and I hope that we can get you on air more as your journey continues to sort of check in with you and see how you're doing. You know, I don't want to hog all of your thoughts to myself, so maybe every now and then you'll come back on air and update us.
Sure, that'd be great.
All right, well, thank you so much, Jeff Olson from Portland.
Thank you, Peter.
We just heard from Jeff Olson. Stay tuned to hear Karen Herring and Joel Corti of the Stutter Talk B Team discuss the topic, knowing what to do and not doing it. During today's episode, the intro and outro music was written and performed by Joel Corti. Peter Reitzis wrote and performed the segue music.
This is David Mitchell. I'm the author of the book Black Song Veen and a patron of the British Stammering Association, and you are listening to Stutter Talk.
This is J.P. Sunda from the Indian Stammering Association, and you are listening to StutterTalk.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Stutter Talk. This is the second half of the episode, knowing what to do and not doing it. And Karen Herring and I of the Stutter Talk B team will be giving you our take on it. So this is kind of a special edition Stutter Talk episode. I don't know if we've ever done something quite like this before, where the B team and the A team, Peter, are in the same episode. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So this is happening.
I feel like we also don't stick to one topic, so this will be interesting for us.
Yeah, to try to stay relatively on topic for a little chunk of time. Let's see if we can do it. It'll be an experiment.
Yeah.
All right, so knowing what to do and not doing it, what are your thoughts, Karen?
I mean, I think that rings very true to me. I think that... I know this is about stuttering, but I think when I hear that, I go, like, the example that I think of is weight loss.
Okay.
Like, I know to be healthy and lose weight, you have to exercise and eat well.
Oh, this is a great analogy. Yeah.
But I don't do those things.
Mm-hmm.
Or you
probably do it for a certain amount of time, like,
right.
I think, like everybody. And then, like, I've been trying to do prior to my wedding, but then it just gets hard and you're like, I want to eat what I want to eat and have fun.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's true for a lot of things in life. It's like, we know what to do.
Yeah.
But the changes that we need to get there just seem too hard.
You're right. It's not unique to stuttering at all.
I always think when I was in undergrad, I got to work a lot with Scott Yaris, and I'm probably going to butcher his saying. But he would describe, like, why people... would be committed to speech therapy and then why sometimes they weren't able to be. And it was about the pain of change is greater than the pain of staying the same.
Yeah.
And I might be saying that completely wrong, but no, I think the idea is the same.
Yeah. And I think I've, whether or not that's exactly right, I've heard that from him as well, and I think it's so true.
I think it's such an interesting thing to, like, be currently in pain and not particularly happy where you are, but the idea of working at it or changing it just seems like such a scary, hard thing that it's almost not worth it. Like, the pain you're in at the moment seems less painful as the change.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further, though, talking about my own experience. It's not, I mean, I guess ultimately it has to do with pain, but maybe pain's not always the right word. Maybe uncomfortable would be the better.
Okay.
But I think for me, it's more, I hate to use the word laziness, but, you know, I am aware of some strategies when it comes to managing my stuttering that, work really well for me. And those things are sort of generally, voluntary stuttering, which can kind of go hand in hand with rate control. Slowing myself down a little bit seems to be helpful in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just doing all kinds of voluntary stuttering, like certainly prolongation and things like that, advertising, and also, you know, just kind of having a plan of how I'm going to manage my stuttering before I go into a situation. And I know that that's not always possible, but a lot of times it is possible. And, you know, I still won't take the time to think about how I might try to manage my stuttering in a given instance.
Right.
So what usually happens to me and what I see my cycle kind of being is that, you know, I'll essentially just be living my life and, you know, I'm at a place where, you know, I don't think about stuttering too often and I probably, stutter a lot, but then all of a sudden, like, it'll just be get to be too overwhelming and I'll be struggling too much. And then, I'll kind of sit down and reflect and then like try to do some stuff. And then I'll do the things that I know work really well for me, and then things will get better relatively rapidly, and then I'll kind of go into my coast mode again.
Right.
And then just not spend time on it or not think about it and be happy, you know, and be relatively happy. So I think for me, it's just getting to a place where... I mean, yeah, I guess ultimately that the pain to change is greater than the pain to stay the same, because the same feels pretty good.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that makes complete sense. And I think I can relate to that too. Like when you're just getting by with things and you're content with them, it doesn't seem like you need to put in the work to change a thing because you're happy.
Yeah.
But then as it gets to a point where you're not getting by anymore and you're not as content, then that's when you sort of have to kick yourself in the butt.
Yeah. And in some ways, I wish that I would work a little harder on managing my stuttering. But in other ways, it's like, you know, I can see exactly why I am how I am.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there, I think there's some ways that working on your stuttering when you're in a place where things are easier can be so helpful.
Yeah, that's
true. But
it's
also like you don't want to work on it when things are easier because things are easier.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really a win there.
Yeah, you're right.
Or it's a win-win. I'm not really sure which. No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was going to say something dumb.
I think that rationale is true for me, but I also think sometimes I don't make a change because I'm afraid.
Oh, all right.
I don't know if it's afraid of not being able to do it well or not doing it to perfection. But it almost sometimes seems easier not to try than to try and maybe have the speech technique not work.
Okay, yeah, because that's kind of a helpless, scary feeling.
Yeah, like you're actually going to put forth, and then you're still struggling a lot.
Yeah.
So to say that I didn't even try almost beats saying I tried and I just couldn't.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me. I used to have this friend in high school who played sports, and he was a really good athlete, but he always had this kind of like aura around him that he was like not like trying his hardest. That was kind of his thing. And then like later in life after high school, and I think back about it, because it was always, you know, high school is a weird time, and it's like, oh man, look at him, like he's barely even trying, and he's so awesome, like he's the best, you know. Right. But then when I thought about it, I'm like, really, he was just probably scared. Maybe he was trying his best, but it was too scary to try your best, because if you try your best and fail, then you truly failed. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I mean, that's true courage, you know, and I think that's probably, you know, the best way to build character and for personal growth is to just try your absolute hardest and see what happens.
Sure.
But it's not always easy.
Looking at maybe this person from high school and someone else on the team who was trying really, really hard and maybe not as successfully, I think I would respect the person who wasn't as good more.
Yeah.
Because they were trying so, so hard.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
But
maybe that's not as cool.
It probably also doesn't feel as great.
Yeah.
To try everything you have and still not be at the place where you want to be.
Although at a core level, it might feel pretty awesome too. It's just, you know, failure or not achieving what you'd like to is not always fun.
I don't know. I'm just thinking like to speech therapy experiences that I've had where it's been very much... the understanding that I had was if I practice enough and if I try enough and I give it my all, then I can be fluent.
Sure.
And I think that in those situations, me trying the best that I could and still not being able to be completely fluent, it didn't feel good. Like I never got the sense of like, well, I put my all into this.
Yeah,
I got the sense like I should have been able to do this, and I failed.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think for me it was I had the exact same experience, but now it's more about like finding that perfect balance and defining success correctly. For me. So what I mean by that is, you know, I'd like to be as fluent as I can, but you know, sometimes if I'm holding too tight and chasing that fluency, God, too much, it leads to more struggle and harder stuttering. So then like in those times, you know, you have to like reassess the situation, and then you have to, you know, throw in voluntary stuttering and give up some quote unquote fluency to make sure that you're being a good communicator. And I think that's just a really like weird, hard thing to wrap your head around. At least it was for me and still kind of is.
I think the thing that, that I believed for a long time and I still see in other people, is that they do truly believe, and I truly believed that if I work hard enough, this will go away.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, any other, like, voluntary stuttering didn't seem even like, why would I try that if clearly I'm just not working hard enough at this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just need to put more work in, and this will be, I'll be fluent.
Gosh, now we're starting to go to that like other topic. well, we range that we're so good at the B team, and I just want to dive right in because you know this is what happens, and it's always like interesting to talk about this stuff.
We should just take notes, and then B team we'll talk about whatever we want because clearly we're not so good at staying on one topic.
But actually, you know, I mean, I'm going to try to bring it back to the original topic. You know, if you're defining success and as being fluent, you know, that kind of changes everything. So, you know, just going back to the whole topic of knowing what to do and not doing it, if your entire goal is to be fluent, like I don't even know what I would do. Like if someone told me be fluent, I guess I don't know what I would do. Maybe like you know, speak in an accent or something, because I, you know what I mean. It's like, yeah, I know what to do to be a better communicator and try my best to speak as easily and clearly as possible. But you know, if you're demanding 100% fluency, and I guess that's the thing. If it's like quote unquote supposed to be perfect stutter free speech, it's like I don't know how to do that. Like,
but there was a point in time that I felt like I could do that.
Sure.
If I just worked hard enough.
Yeah. And I honestly only think that I crossed over to having a different set of expectations for myself probably only like 3 years ago. Because that was always like my hope.
So right.
But
then like, how do you get to that place? Is that just like, you fail enough and you realize that you can't?
I guess it's like anything. Like if your goal is to be, you know, the greatest professional basketball player of all time. And, you know, I think if you're like in sixth grade, there's like a, you know, over 50% chance that that's your goal in life. And then as you get, which is totally, it's a fine goal for where you're at. And it totally, in the context of your life as a sixth grade person, it makes total sense. And, it, you know, no one should say, you're not going to be the greatest basketball player of all time, because you never know. Maybe that kid will be. But right. As the kid gets older and has more experiences, and chances are his set up expectations for himself of being the greatest basketball player of all time will change to something else, probably more realistic.
Right.
You know, and that's fine. And that's good. You just hope that when that kid grows up to be 60 years old, that they're still not hoping to be the greatest basketball player of all time, because at that point, and that's like, you know, it's not happening, kid. I mean, not kids, 60-year-old,
right?
You know. So I think for me, you know, I hit a point where it was like, you know what? Yeah, I mean, I'm I'm not going to be fluent all the time. It's, you know, it seems kind of ridiculous to even say that like that was my hope. Because right. Now, but I mean, it totally was.
So it's kind of a mix between, you have to know what to do, but also you have to know if what you're aiming to do is really realistic.
Or healthy, yeah.
Right.
Well, that actually might be a good place to wrap it up.
All right.
Unless you have any more comments.
No, I'm okay. Good.
We covered it, and we didn't get too far off topic. And we brought it back to the original topic.
I love it, Joel.
We're getting better. All right. Well, Karen, I will see you very soon.
And, sounds good.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Stutter Talk. We are ending today's program with a short conversation between Jeff Olson and Peter Reitzes.
I know. I think that sometimes my mind gets lost in thought, and actually, I've been thinking about recently about cluttering. You've heard of cluttering?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and wondering that. I don't know that much about it, but there's some moments and situations that just seem like. Are very hard for me to get the words together, apart from the stuttering aspect of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I sounded on that episode.
Well, I think you were fine. I mean, this is tough stuff. I mean, I like these episodes where you're clearly still in the journey. You know, you haven't climbed to the top of the mountain and you're looking back down.
I'm definitely still climbing this mountain.
Well, but I mean, to me, that's very interesting. So I appreciate the struggle. In fact, I think, I think one of the reasons Joel might like this topic so much is that, I think he's had very similar experiences.
Has he?
Yeah, I think he, as we're talking, I think that he's talked about it a little bit on Stutter Talk.
So. Yeah, I think he's gotten to, a place that I want to be, someday. Like a lot of other people, just comfortable in it. And that is just something I've never been comfortable with.
Yeah, that's one I don't know you well enough, but I did want to throw in the whole treading water thing because, as you were talking about your experience, it sounded like you were uncomfortable, but maybe not uncomfortable enough to dive in. And that's just from my seat. I don't know you well enough to sit, to know if that's true or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost as in if I had reached that bottom that might help it move forward faster almost.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thankful for it. I mean, I think I was where you are for a lot. Well, I was where you are without the wanting to change. I could hide my stuttering and be miserable doing it. But when I couldn't hide it anymore, that's when I really had to change, when it was just coming out.
So how come you couldn't hide it anymore?
It just, after 20 years of hiding my stuttering, I would change a word and the word I would change it to would just start to stutter again. I just lost my ability to hide it all the time. And then people think that you're really weird because all of a sudden somebody they know as a normal person is stuttering.
Right.
And that gets really awkward.
Right. And you have to explain it. I mean, that's one of the thoughts I had going into, deciding to be more open about is that all the people that have known me over the years, I'd have to go back or not, every time I see them again, I might have to explain the whole history of everything and why I stutter and why I didn't back then. And just that whole thought of explaining everything over and over to everyone I've ever known, it's kind of daunting.
It is daunting, but right before we went on air, I was on Facebook, and there was somebody I knew growing up and his mom and his sister all having a Facebook conversation, and I thought, boy, I'm friends with all of them, and they didn't know me as a stutterer, but they sure see all the posts I make about Stutter Talk and stuttering. So I don't feel the need to—I used to feel the need to tell them, and now it's kind of like, well, we're Facebook friends, and if they want to know, they can ask.
Right.
I don't feel the need to send them a private note. And if they think it's weird, then they think it's weird. I mean, it's a little different, but when you go on Facebook and you see that somebody you went to high school with is gay or has diabetes or something. I mean, I know it's not stuttering, but, I can ask them about that or I cannot.
Right.
So, but again, I know stuttering is, well, it's kind of similar to the whole gay thing, because you can hide being gay, like some people I knew in high school did, and you can hide stuttering.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot like being gay.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because I do, I don't know if still, but there was a time on Facebook where I did have one, maybe two friends who came out of the closet, and I never felt the need to send them a note and ask them about it. It's just kind of like, oh, well, okay, that seems reasonable. And maybe they could think the same thing about me. Like, oh, gee, he came out of his stuttering closet. That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I've you know, considered just doing Facebook just to do a little more advertising. I don't do Facebook now, but it certainly would be a great way to just, you know, kind of subtly advertise.
Yeah, yeah, or not so subtly.
yeah, yeah. I guess you could make your front page, you know, I stutter on your front page.
Yeah, yeah. Or some people, I know I've heard from people who have made posts in stuttering groups, and then they get upset when their friends who don't stutter find those posts.
Right.
Yeah. It's because they've sort of outed themselves.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I have one of your stutter talk cups that I keep at work. That I just keep that as a subtle advertising on my desk.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I always mean to buy one of those Stutter Talk cups.
You don't have one of your own cups?
I don't. I've been meaning to get one. I'm going to have to do that. I should really do it. I'm going to do it. It's not avoidance. I just haven't done it.
You've been a little busy. I don't know how you find the time to do all these podcasts. Yeah. I know you do a lot of research for them, and it's got to take a lot of time.
Oh, man, it's ridiculous, but it's, you know, I have two hobbies. I run in the morning and I do stutter talk, so, you know, it does come third, usually, work, family, or family and work and stutter talk, but I do love it, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to say that some of the end of this conversation was pretty good. Can I keep some of it in the show, or would you rather me not?
Oh, you can put whatever you want in there.
That's awesome.